Good evening and welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse here on WDIY. We are Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm John Pierce, your host. So glad to have you with me this evening. Neil Heaver is our operations director. He is working the board for us. We don't get to talk very much about sports on Lehigh Valley Discourse, but this evening we are going to do just that because my guests are three athletic directors from colleges here in the Lehigh Valley: Mary Beth Spurk of Moravian, Lynn Tubman of Muhlenberg, and Sherita Freeman Lafayette. They are going to tell us about their experiences with sports, and we are going to learn a lot about collegiate sports, but we're also going to wander around in different directions and talk about different levels of sports, Division 1, 2, 3. We're going to talk about some professional sports all over the map. This is going to be a fun time for us all. Sherita Freeman is the first female and first black DA. Is it DA or AD, Sherita?
AD, but Director of Athletics.
Director of Athletics. If you do the initials, it's AD. I already learned something.
Yeah.
Thank you. So you were a three-sport athlete at Hillside High School in New Jersey.
Yes.
And the sports were?
Cross-country, basketball, and then outdoor track and field.
And she has a bachelor's degree from Dartmouth College, a major in environmental studies, and minor in African American studies. And your career goal there was an orthopedic surgeon.
Yeah, where'd you find that? Oh, my goodness. You're taking me back.
This comes from, full disclosure, this comes from the morning call.
Yeah.
So what happened with that goal, the orthopedic surgeon one?
You know what? When I was coming into college, I was thinking about what I wanted to study. I had a knee injury in high school and obviously had a great experience working with the orthopedic surgeon that helped me get back on the court. And so I was like, hey, that's what I want to be when I grow up, type of thing. And, you know, I got to college, and obviously when you're at an institution, liberal arts institution, where there are tons of opportunities to explore and do different things, a lot of college students change their majors all the time. And so I was definitely one of those people, and so enjoyed my major as an environmental studies person. But can't say I'm using much of that right now, but certainly a good foundation to have.
Right. Well, you went to Penn University of Pennsylvania?
Yes.
As a senior associate athletic director and senior woman administrator. You were involved in USA Swimming. Was that for the Olympics specifically?
Yeah, so I did an internship with USA Swimming in between my junior and senior year of college.
And that was at Colorado Springs, a beautiful place.
Yes, it is.
You have a master's degree from UMass, sport management. Now, when I think of UMass, I think of what? Women's basketball, don't I? Isn't that the big one at UMass?
I think their programs, you know, women's basketball is a strong program, absolutely, but tons of others too, yeah.
Can you name the coach of the women's team at UMass?
And actually, no, sadly.
Mary Beth?
No. Okay. You were a decade at Temple University.
Yes.
And over 2 years at Penn as administrator. NCAA's Pathway Program, what's that about?
Yeah, so it's a professional development program for rising administrators who seek to become athletic directors. So I was fortunate enough to be selected for that program back in June of 2017. And it's an opportunity to expose you to mentors, to all the inner workings of being an athletic director and preparing you for the opportunity to sit in the seat.
Oh, that sounds great. So that is Sherita Freeman, who is the athletic director at Lafayette Leopards.
Absolutely.
We have a menagerie here today. We have a leopard, a mule, and a greyhound. Mm-hmm. I wonder if the three of them got into a fight, who would win that one?
I think we'd all pick our own mascot.
So let's go to Mary Beth Spurk, who is from Moravian College, where she has been the women's basketball coach for more than three decades. Is it possible?
It's not possible. I think you're making that up.
Only the truth here. You went to Notre Dame Green Pond High School.
Yes.
Graduated from there. And then went on to Dickinson College for a bachelor's degree. Tell us about coordinating the softball team there.
Well, when I first got there, it was a club team. So for 3 years, we were a club, and our coaches were just faculty members. And so my senior year, we finally went intercollegiate, and it was really pretty neat to be part of the first varsity team, you know, to play intercollegiate softball. And I know the first 3 years I could still see it in this one academic building. I went into a class, I peeked in and asked the one girl if she could play. I said, could you play right field? Because I figured it would be the easiest to play, and because we needed one more person. So so yeah, it's come a long way, and it's you know, I feel pretty proud that I was part of the beginning of it. Although I guess it makes me feel a little bit old too. But
now it's an intercollegiate sport.
Correct. Yes.
Beginning in your senior year.
My senior year. Yeah.
Terrific.
We became varsity. Yep.
Oh, that's a great story. I told Lynn Tubman, whom we're going to talk about in a minute, that I have some pet peeves about sports. So I'm going to throw one in right here. Now, this is just, I get to vent because I'm the host here. So we talk about world champion, this and that. There's only one world champion sport, in my view, and that's soccer, because mm-hmm. there is a World Cup that involves many countries. We have the World Series in baseball, and now we talk about world champions in softball. World champions in the NBA. No, they're not world champions. They're the NBA champions, or they're the softball USA, whatever the organization is called, champions, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know where the term World Series comes from? The newspaper in New York, which was called the New York World, set up the series the first time, and they started calling it the World Series. How I wish that had been the New York Sun that set up that, because now everything's world. We're the world champs of everything.
Right.
Well, that's the American psyche. Okay, so let's go to Lynn Tubman, who is the first permanent female director of athletics at Muhlenberg College. She was the leading all-time women's basketball scorer at DeSales University. Has that record been eclipsed, Lynn?
It has not.
Ooh.
But I'd be happy to. I would love for someone to eclipse it.
I just can't believe that all these athletes who set records say, but records are meant to be broken, right? But has anybody come close that you know of?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, I don't think so. I actually was coaching when Lynn was playing, believe it or not.
Right.
I don't know that it's going to be broken. That was a pretty amazing record.
All right. So did you gun for Lynn? Was she the one that you said, hey, we have to stop her tonight?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it never worked, though.
It never worked.
And I just want to add, my husband does a good job at keeping me humble. In addition to the all-time leading scorer, he's pretty sure I have the record for fewest assists in a collegiate career.
Probably so, the truth, yeah.
You have a bachelor's degree from DeSales and a master's from Lehigh. Penn State, Mont Alto, your assistant athletic director, correct? Mm-hmm. La Roche College, Pittsburgh suburb, your athletic director there. So you have that experience behind you before coming to Muhlenberg. Philadelphia University?
At the time, yes.
At the time, and now it is?
Jefferson.
That's Jefferson now, okay. And you were associate athletic director and senior woman administrator. Now, what does woman administrator mean? Why wouldn't it just be administrator?
The NCAA, and I don't know when that title became part of higher ed and collegiate athletics, but the NCAA's desire was to promote women in sports and created this position for the senior woman administrator at all institutions to provide that opportunity.
Okay. Okay. And then you were at Chestnut Hill College, Director of Athletics and Recreation. That's a beautiful part of Pennsylvania, Chestnut Hill. And at Drexel University, Associate Athletic Director and Senior Woman Administrator. And let's give a shout out to your daughters, Hannah and Lily.
Sure.
How old are they now?
19 and 20.
I'm going way back to their preschool years where you ran the preschool for them. Correct?
That's right.
Yeah,
you'd forgotten that.
You
did your homework. I didn't forget.
All right, so good for Hannah and Lily. Well, let's talk about the sports programs that are going on now at the various colleges in the Lehigh Valley. Let's start off with Sherita at Lafayette College. How many sports are you involved with over there? And are there any changes coming along?
So we sponsor 23 sports at Lafayette College, and we are committed to all of those sports and really are excited about the future of our programs. We launched our athletic strategic plan called Creating a Championship Culture. And so our goal moving forward is to be able to provide the best experiences and opportunities for all of our participants at the Division I level.
All right, so it's 23 sports that you do. Let's go to Moravian College and talk to Mary Beth about what your program is over there.
So we, similar to, I think, you know, Sherita's philosophy at Lafayette, you know, our sports, we want all to be successful. You know, when you count indoor men's and women's track and then men's and women's outdoor track and men's and women's cross country, a lot of people don't realize they're two separate sports. So we're totaled, we're totaled 20 sports that we sponsor. And, you know, at Division III, you know, obviously the philosophy is academics first and then your athletics. But we want to be successful as anybody, putting any team out there, that we want to be successful on the field, on the court, you know, out on the track, whatever the case may be. So it is, you know, like all three of us sitting here, we know what is most important for the student athletes.
And that's their classes, their courses, their academic progress.
Mm-hmm.
There was a coach at Muhlenberg College, Sam Beitelman, years ago. He became the athletic director. He was a football coach and a baseball coach and whatnot. And he said to me one time, if a kid comes to me and says that he's having trouble in a certain course, and students will do that, right, to their coaches. My first question is, are you going to class? And if he's not, then no love from the coach. So that's Division III. Let's talk about this Division I, II, III. What is this? And there's a Division I-A or II?
Yeah, so there are different distinctions at the level depending on where you sponsor football.
Okay. Oh, it's based on football?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
So, but do you consider yourself Division III at these colleges for sports other than football?
No.
Or you don't talk about divisions?
In Division III, it's just Division III. There's no double A or whatever. And so everybody is equal in Division III. We don't have any levels, only Division I.
Okay.
So to elaborate, at the Division I level, you have FBS, which is bowl subdivision football, and you have FCS, which is a division in which Lafayette College participates, and then you have Division I programs that don't sponsor football at all, and so those are the three different levels.
Division I who don't sponsor football. So they would have other sports, but just not football.
Correct.
All right.
And there are a lot of Division III schools that do not have football as well. I mean, there are a lot that don't have other sports too, but we're specifically talking about football.
The driver in this system of 1, 2, 3 is football.
Not necessarily. No. Okay. No. I think the driver might be in Division One.
Yes.
Would be football for those institutions that sponsor it. Division Two and Three, like Mary Beth said, there are no separations. Some sponsor it, football, some don't.
Right. So Sherita mentioned the goal of having a championship attitude.
Culture.
Is that what you call it? Culture.
Yes.
A championship culture. So question here. You're at the Division III level, so academic subjects are the most important. That's what the students are there for. Is it really important to win as much as you can, or is it simply to give the students a good physical workout? And I have a little story to tell. It's when we come back from our break. We're going to have to take a break in just a minute. But Lynn, what would you say about that? About the importance of winning?
I think Sherita and Mary Beth already echoed this. It's important to win. It's a part of the positive student athlete experience we're trying to provide. These students are coming, in addition to get their degree, to compete, and they want to win championships. And that's, you know, what we're trying to accomplish as well.
Okay. So let's go to then the profile at Muhlenberg College. Mm-hmm. How many sports?
Great. We sponsor 22 sports at the Division III level in the Centennial Conference. And again, a very high academic conference that we all want to provide the student athletes with the academic experience, the athletic experience, but ultimately we're educators and we want to help them to develop, to prepare them for after graduation. And we think we have a valuable role in the educational process.
Speaking of that, as athletic directors, are you able to teach? Do you have time enough to teach a course in physical education, or is that not feasible? Whoever wants to jump in.
I used to teach, but I don't anymore. I probably haven't taught in a couple of years. We had a physical education major track. It was not a major, but the requirement. But we don't have that anymore. We still offer a couple fitness and wellness classes, and a couple of the other coaches do teach them. But I do not teach anymore.
All right, but you're athletic director at Moravian, and you also coach.
Correct.
So
correct.
You're coaching basketball.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. And what about at Muhlenberg?
We do not have a physical education track. Okay. At Muhlenberg. Some of our coaches did teach in the past, but they no longer do as far right. as the traditional classroom setting.
Right. And so you don't do that either.
No.
You do not teach. Mm-mm. And how about Sherita?
I do not teach either. I was an adjunct professor in my years at Temple, have more than my my share of responsibilities as
exactly.
the athletic director at this point in time.
And that's at Lafayette College.
Yes. Yes.
Well, it's time for us to take a break here on Lehigh Valley Discourse. As you can tell, we're talking about sports this evening. And stay with us. We will be back in just a moment.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
This evening, we have three athletic directors from the Lehigh Valley: Mary Beth Spurk, Moravian College, Lynn Tubman from Muhlenberg, and Sherita Freeman from Lafayette College. The unusual part about this is that they are all women, and we don't find that many women athletic directors around the country, do we? Male-dominated world, NCAA has fewer than 25% of women who are athletic directors. And that's up from 20% in 1980. Those are the figures I have. Is that enough progress, or how do you feel about that? Are we making progress, or not so much?
Well, I'll go first, since I'm the oldest here, and I think it's great. I mean, to sit here with two young professionals, female, as an athletic director is tremendous. But I still think we have a long ways to go. I think the NCAA, Lynn said earlier, made a commitment to senior women's administrators, and now I think there's a commitment even further in the athletic director position. So, you know, part of the reason I took the job was to show young student athletes, female student athletes, that you can have a power position, that you're able to be a director and be in charge, and because I think for so many years it was just only men could do it, and women couldn't handle it, that it was too tough. You had to deal with football. You had a lot of, obviously male-dominated sports. So do I think we're making progress? Absolutely. I mean, obviously, we're sitting here with you, and it's a huge progress to have three women in the Lehigh Valley in the position. But again, like I said, I think we still have a long way to go.
Okay.
I would echo and agree with that. I think we have come a long way, not to be cliche, but there is room to grow. And I think not just in the athletic director position, but in broadcasting, in television, in the WNBA, girls have women role models that they can now look up to and aspire to be. And, receiving the job at Muhlenberg, sometimes you take it for granted. You work hard, and you take for granted some of your accomplishments. But I had so many young women athletes come up to me, alumni come up to me, wives of former male athletes, alumni come up to me and say, "We are so excited. We are so proud to have a woman in that position."
Oh, that's terrific.
It is. And sometimes you need to hear that and then sit back and reflect on, wow, like, that's pretty cool. And I can be a role model for my daughters and young women. But I think we have a lot of momentum. We have room to grow, but I think the momentum's on our side.
Yes.
And I couldn't agree more. I think the reception that I've received for achieving the athletic director role at Lafayette has been very, very similar in terms of the student athletes there, the women student athletes that are there, very, very excited to have a female athletic director, as well as the alumni and other constituents that are affiliated with the college. But immediately, as Mary Beth was talking, I really was thinking about the mentors, the athletic directors and senior level administrators that were women in my career that were the people that I looked up to or the people that I aspired to become like. And so the more of us that there are out there, I think it becomes, I'm not going to say easier, but it becomes more likely that women will aspire to become athletic directors, to be senior level administrators, because they see others that have been able to achieve it. Mm-hmm. And so not only do we sit in the seat and represent those who mentored us and helped us get here, we also have to basically pay it forward and be there to help others have the opportunity in the
right.
future.
And working toward this would be in domains not only sports, but working toward the time when it's just how competent are you to do the job and not whether you're a man or a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
I feel that we're in that mode now. I remember back when I arrived at Muhlenberg College, which was 1970, that for those first few years, I mean, maybe the first decade or so, the women's basketball court was in the basement of one of the dorms.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw it move over to where, with Title IX coming along, that they shared the big basketball court, the big with all the bleachers and all that, with the men. And so then you had the problems of scheduling, who can use the court at what time and all these things. But that's a tremendously big jump from the basement of a of a dorm with virtually no bleachers in there to seeing the women come out the way they have.
Yeah.
So Let's pretend that, just for some fun here, let's pretend that we are a committee on rules. You have rules committees all the time with all these different levels on NCAA. Now, talking about NCAA, do you all go to meetings that include Division 1, 2, 3, or is it only Division 3 when you're going for the whole country?
There's the NCAA meetings are for 1, 2, and 3. So you'll go sometimes to a meeting with all three divisions, and then there'll be breakout sessions specific to each division. So it varies, but the rules, a lot of the rules are the same for all three divisions.
Okay. And so let's suppose that we're on one of these rules committees. What would be one rule that you would change, pick your sport, something that you think would really improve that sport? You have any ideas? Well, I'll get you started. I'm going to pretend that I'm the head of the committee and say that we talk a lot nowadays about how long a game takes to play, and this would be particularly baseball, and I think also football to a certain extent. So what about shortening baseball? Softball typically plays 7 innings.
Mm-hmm.
Why not baseball the same? Are we going to get pushback on that?
Well, you may. I know some doubleheaders, we play, at least in the Landmark Conference, we play some doubleheaders will just be 7-inning games. And then the single game, usually baseball plays 3-game series, and then they play a 9-inning game. So I don't think it's that far reaching to go that way. The 7-inning game for softball is just, it's a quicker game. It's a lot quicker. I know because when we have game administrators, if they're game administrators for softball versus baseball, it's a huge time difference, huge commitment change. So that's actually not far reaching. Now, I don't know if you had baseball coaches in here if they'd argue it, but...
Yeah. And some of the old timers. I mean, we don't like
right.
change.
And I think that... you know, our collegiate sports are different at the Division I, II, and III level, but for the most part try to mirror the professional sports. For example, women's basketball went to quarters because of the NBA, WNBA being in quarters. So I think you would get pushback from the coaches if that's how we were trying to shorten a game. Like Mary Beth said, a lot of conferences do doubleheaders, 7-inning. But there's other, I think, rules that have been looked at over the years. Clock for pitching, the shot. I want to say a shot clock. It's not a shot clock. A pitching timer that,
right. Which I don't think is taken all that seriously.
No, huh? But some conferences have gone to wooden bats, thinking it would speed up the game. There's less hits with a wooden bat.
Is that right?
In Division II, a couple conferences did move to the wooden bat leagues, but it hasn't taken off either.
We definitely need wooden bats. I mean, the crack of the bat is not the same when you have a metallic bat, is it, Sherita?
No, I don't think so.
So any other rule changes that you would like to propose? I would propose this. Get rid of the shot clock in basketball. Hmm. All you've done with that is say, let's just run and shoot and don't care about defense. What do you say to that, my committee members?
I say we need a shot clock at the high school level.
I agree. Yeah. The shot clock, yeah, it is. It becomes sometimes back and forth, but it really, the pace of the game, it really changes. And Lynn, I know, is kidding, but, you know, I'm on the road a lot recruiting, watching high school games, and it can become a struggle sometimes watching a game because it's very slow. And it changes if you're ahead, you can't stall. You can't hold the ball. So it forces the team that's winning to keep on playing.
You're saying if there's a shot clock.
if there's with no shot clock, you can, yeah, if there's a shot clock, then it will force you, you've got to play.
But if there's not a shot clock,
you could stall.
You can stall.
I've sat at a game and a team stalled the entire quarter, and to me, that's not, you're not doing anything for these student athletes. And
but Mary Beth, you're not very tall for a basketball player and coach. And it actually, to tell our listeners, I am taller than Mary Beth, and I'm 5'10". So that tells you. Now, the little guys in basketball, they're the ones who are the good dribblers.
Absolutely.
To see them dribble out there for 5 or 6 or 7 minutes and taunt the other team, you know, to come out and get the ball.
Well, it's not a good for fans to watch that, and also then it gives a team that's losing an opportunity to get back in the game too if you keep the game moving. But I do agree with you on the smaller people handle the ball the best and probably are the quickest and probably the toughest as well. I don't know. I could keep on going on that.
Okay, so that's some of the rules. Just what do you think about we're into basketball here because all three of you. The major sport that you've participated is basketball, correct? The 3-point line, bad idea. What do you say, Sharita?
Hey, gotta have the 3-point shot. It makes the game more interesting.
People work with me here.
Yeah. So I'm gonna disagree with you on that one.
All right. She's so nice when she does that. How can I be angry?
It definitely has changed the game. And a lot of our coaches are into analytics, and obviously 3 points are more than two.
Yeah.
So it definitely has changed the game for the big person, the inside players.
Now, once in a while, you have a player whose foot might be on that line, so you're not sure. Takes the shot, makes the shot. You're not sure if it's a 2-pointer or a 3-pointer. Stop the game. Go over and look at videotape. What do you think about this kind of thing, stopping the progress of the game?
Well, it's everywhere now. They're looking at, you know, I watch the, you know, football. They do it all the time. I like it sometimes, but I agree with you on that. I'll agree with you on this one that I think it slows the game. You know, officials are going to make mistakes. That's part of the game. I'd say that to my players all the time. Look, you can't control. You only control what you can control, and that's how your effort and how you can play. So by stopping and constantly reversing, you know, baseball, did the ball come before the foot touched the bag, that kind of thing. They read over and over. It does become, it really does talk about, you know, making the game longer, really does make the game longer. But, you know, people will argue that you get the call right. So I don't know. Sport, I think it's a bang bang thing. You want to keep moving. So I'd be in favor of not looking at instant replay.
All right. Ooh. And instant replay, we know, is here to stay.
Right.
There's no way that's going to be taken back. What do you say, Lynn? You agree with Mary Beth?
I think at our level, Division III, we're not utilizing it, and I am absolutely fine with that.
Oh, all right. You're real good with that. Yeah. And Sharita also?
I'm going to disagree. I think it's important to get the play right. So I know it becomes a little bit frustrating for the fans, probably for the coaches and players at times, with the expectation that the officials will get it correct the first time. But ultimately, I think that the outcomes of games are sometimes dictated by a call or several calls. And so getting it right for the benefit of the outcome for the student athletes that are participating, I think is worth going back and looking at it.
That's interesting, yes. Yeah, that's a big change in sports from some years ago. Let's go back to the collegiate level and even the high school level and talk about women wrestlers. Is that even a possibility nowadays, right, Beth?
Absolutely. I think somebody I just saw, they just started a women's female wrestling program. Opportunities. I think it gives young girls and women another opportunity to compete. And, I would say probably 20 years ago, that was not a possibility. But now, I have 5 brothers, and they all wrestled, and I always wanted to wrestle. I wrestled with them all the time. So.
And you survived to tell about it.
I survived. I think I beat them a few times.
That's great.
But, yeah, I mean... I think it's great. It's another opportunity for young girls.
Yeah. Well, I thought girls and women's bodies were too fragile for this wrestling stuff. Lynn,
John,
what do you say?
John, I would have to say it's another opportunity and it's fantastic. It's just another example of the momentum females and women and girls have, and providing them any opportunity they are interested in is a great thing. It's an emerging sport for the NCAA, so they've recognized it as a growth opportunity for women.
It's coming along now more and more, and so it could be that in the future, even in the Olympics, they would have women wrestling?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, possibility. From the Express Times, the formation of girls wrestling makes New Jersey the first state in the Northeast to offer the sport and the 12th state in the U.S. Now, what do they mean when they talk about one key element is that hydration testing now will count for girls as well as boys? Hydration testing. I don't know about that.
I'm looking at Mary Beth as a wrestling expert since her brothers wrestle.
Has something to do with the weigh-in?
I think it's the weigh-in. Yeah. They probably give you certain pounds or something like that. So I would say it's probably having to do with the weigh-in.
Yeah. Okay. And as a new sport, girls will have the choice to compete solely against girls or also against boys during the regular season up until district championships. That's high school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that surprises me. I would have thought that you would keep girls and boys separate on this, despite what Mary Beth, her championship... I hope you got a trophy or something from your brothers for...
I highly doubt it.
For beating them up.
I think there are girls currently without high school programs that are wrestling against boys. So I think what they're trying to do is advance wrestling, but while some programs are still developing, they're going to provide that opportunity for girls to still wrestle.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you all agree on that that's a good movement forward. My guests this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse are talking to us about sports, particularly in the Lehigh Valley, at their colleges, Muhlenberg, Moravian, and Lafayette. But also, we're just roaming around the whole world of sports. It's a fun time to be on the air. We must take a break now. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment here on WDIY.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
My guests this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse are three athletic directors from the Lehigh Valley colleges, and they are all women. Mary Beth Spurk at Moravian College, Lynn Tubman at Muhlenberg, and Sherita Freeman at Lafayette. And let me just say that I think each of you is in your second year as athletic director.
Yes.
Correct? And we're looking forward to the 2019-20 seasons of all of your different sports. Let me ask you, as athletic director, if you could name one major challenge that you have. Lynn?
Not enough hours in the day.
About, and that is from Lynn Tubman and she says, quoted in the morning call, You tell me if it's a correct quote, right? I'm goal oriented, work, work, work. What can I accomplish next? Tubman's goals for Muhlenberg are not defined yet, but her mind is churning. Does that sound right?
Almost.
All right.
Almost.
Well, now that your daughters are 19 and 20.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can work.
All this
work.
Free time on my hands.
Yeah. Right.
I think the one thing from that quote that I think is missing is working with a team. I think that's important for an athletic director. To be successful, It's not just an individual work. It's
working with the team, coaches,
staff,
right,
college community, right, for us to be successful.
Right. That's a good point. Sherita?
You know, I think, you know, not enough hours in the day. So, you know, trying to get a lot done, you know, especially when there are a lot of enhancements and changes that you're trying to implement. Of course, I think, you know, any athletic director or any coach would probably say more resources would be nice. So those present some challenges because there's not, you know, unlimited source of those. But I think as well, you know, trying to make sure that you continue to strike the right balance in terms of expectations and goals for your student athletes, for I think all of us in terms of the kinds of institutions that we work at. We are trying to make sure that our student athletes are succeeding as students first and as athletes second, or maybe 1 and 1A, because I think from the student athlete's perspective, they want to be just as successful in their athletic pursuits. And so as the landscape of especially in Division I, as the landscape of athletics evolves over time, protecting that student piece becomes more and more challenging as you set out as an athletic director at an institution within the Patriot League and at Lafayette, where that is such a piece that's at the core of what we do is the academic performance.
Right. And you're not preparing athletes to go to what they call the next level, mm-hmm, where they're going to be playing professional sports, right? Have you ever had an athlete in your experience at level at Division III who went on to be a professional athlete?
We've had a few people, you know, a couple baseball players that got looked at. I actually coached one player that went to Europe
in basketball,
yeah. But you know, 9 times out of 10, no, they're not going to the next level. But you know, they're certainly still working just as hard and doing all the things that any other big-time, big Division I athlete is doing as well.
Now, we have, specifically for women, the WNBA it's started 20 years ago, mm-hmm, and so there's a momentum behind that. I think they're on hard times right now, trying to figure out what season of the year they play and getting the crowds to come out and whatnot. It's a tough thing to do. But that's the one area I can think of where women at the collegiate level might think I could go to the next level, which would be professional, would be the WNBA. I think that the mindset of students at Division III schools is not, I'm going to become a professional athlete. They're going to major in
absolutely
something. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a different pursuit in life. But they'll always enjoy sports. It's like you play an instrument in a band or orchestra. All the rest of your life, you appreciate that more than if you hadn't done that. So let's. One of the things that I've noticed recently that I think is really encouraging is how women have come into their own as announcers on sports, radio and television. They're just as knowledgeable as the men are. I think we're on the cusp of it. We're seeing in the last, decade maybe, the first of the superstars who are coming along. And when you're in that kind of a situation where you're the icebreakers, you have to be super, right? You have to be a little bit better than if you were a man. And I think they've shown themselves to do that. So would any of you consider being an announcer at some time? Would you enjoy that?
You know, I thought about it, but I think, you know, I'm pursuing my true calling. I've always thought about being a color analyst for basketball games. It still might be in my future, but I certainly admire those who I, you know, am able to listen to on the television, and in particular Beth Mowens, who's a Lafayette grad, who is doing a fantastic job in the NFL, and Doris Burke, who I think we all had an opportunity to meet, and she's doing a phenomenal job with on the basketball front. So I'll leave it to the pros.
Right.
I would agree. I have no interest in pursuing that career path. Okay. However, I've been inspired by the women that are doing it. It's impressive.
And it is impressive, yes.
Well, I actually wanted to call. We are talking about me calling one of the men's games, one of the men's basketball games, or possibly even a football game. Not that that's a career that I'd like to get into, but just as something different to throw somebody else on the air. So you may hear me on the airwaves at some point. So I could be. I've been practicing here and there. So
very good, mm-hmm. Very good. I love it. One of my pet peeves about announcing. So Sherita and Mary Beth, heads up on this one, right?
Uh oh.
Is the use of the future tense to describe a play that just happened. So the shortstop catches the pop-up, and the announcer says, and the shortstop will catch the pop-up to end the inning. The player catches a pass in the end zone in football. The player will catch that pass, and his feet will be in bounds. We're describing something that just happened with a future tense. These people are well educated, aren't they? This drives me crazy.
I can't say I've heard that before, but as I'm listening to you, I'm like, well, maybe I have and just haven't noticed.
Listen, if you listen to sports, you will hear it.
We'll hear it now.
Okay. I will duly note it, all right? I will make sure if I ever get online, I won't do that.
All right. Let's go to a sport we haven't talked about, and that is golf. Now, in each of your colleges, you have a golf team, mm-hmm. right? Is there a men's team and a women's team?
Muhlenberg, yes, we have both.
Moravian, just men, but we're hoping to have women's program very soon.
Okay. And at Lafayette, we just have men's golf.
All right. So here's a rule change that I would like to propose for golf. Here we're back to our rules committee, and that is no divots.
Anyone, must be a golfer.
Anyone who I did some hacking around when I was young, but not for years. But I just can't believe you look out at a beautiful fairway and you see all these little pock marks all over the place. If you outlawed divots, you wouldn't have that problem. Now, is it so difficult to hit a golf ball without taking a divot? Come on.
For me, it is.
And for me.
I think it's part of the game.
You've just been taught, you must take a divot when you hit, an 8-iron?
Yeah, well, I think, just watching the pros golf and me playing not so well, but trying to play, that it is part of the game, like Lynn said, and unfortunately, I'm not sure you could get rid of them. I'm not sure people could play without hitting a divot.
Oh, boy. You people are not working well with me today here. Let's talk about a couple of sports that I bet are not on your campuses. Kickball. Why couldn't we have a kickball teams?
I'm sure some of us have them on the recreation level. Club, maybe.
Intramurals.
Is that right?
Yes.
Intramurals. Good. Sure. Well, I'm sure. Pleased about that. What about curling?
We do not have curling, although I know that in Bethlehem there is, or Lehigh Valley, there is a curling club, because I know two of our former student athletes are on the curling club, but there's no intercollegiate.
Not in the college itself.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
No. That's a long shot, I know, but my wife and I get excited every 4 years. Guess why?
To watch curling.
In the Olympics.
Right.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And then it just looks like a really neat thing, and we don't promote it very much. How about coaches? Women being coaches of women's teams is pretty common. What about a woman being a coach of a men's team?
Well, I think that you're seeing more and more that, just like Lynn had said earlier about opportunities in all different areas of sport, you're seeing more and more women having a chance to coach men, be an administrator, assistant, whatever the case may be. But my kind of change in that thought process, I still think we need more women as coaches. I've seen a huge shift in, and again, I'm going to talk specifically basketball because I'm most familiar because that's what I coach, but a huge shift in more men are coaching women than, and I don't know how the statistics off the top of my head, but unfortunately, there's fewer and fewer role models for young women playing. It doesn't even matter what sport because fewer women are coaching. So I'm a huge proponent of trying to get young female athletes to get into the profession, whether it's coaching, officiating, announcing, administration. We just need more and more.
Mm-hmm. We are starting to see even some officials in football mm-hmm. who are women. Is there one or maybe two or three at this point that you can think of?
It's a couple.
Yeah,
a couple. It's just starting, kind of. Mm-hmm. But it's always been a macho sport. These guys are out there trying to kill each other. I have a question for you. If you had sons, would you encourage them to play football with the concussions that we talk about nowadays? This is the only sport I know where at the beginning of, and I'm talking Division III also, at the side of the field there's an ambulance mm-hmm. waiting in case it has to be brought. What kind of craziness is this? How about if you had sons?
You know, I think there are ultimately there are safety concerns with the sport of football, as there are in other sports. Catastrophic injuries, you know, happen, you know, in various sports. So I do have a true appreciation for the sport and you know how it builds leaders, as do other sports as well. So if I have a son that wishes to play football, I would not discourage it. But your question, I think, was would I encourage it, and I'm not sure at this point.
And I to go off of that, I think we've done a lot with the rules in youth football to change the game on the collegiate level and the pro level to make it safer. I agree that I have an appreciation for the sport of football. I love watching it. If I had a son, I think I would echo what you're saying. I would not discourage it.
But you're glad you had two daughters, right?
Absolutely.
I feel that way too. I feel as if I would not encourage my. I guess if their true passion turned out to be, I really need to play football, then I would say, okay. There was a student years ago, a college student, who told me that, yes, to be on a team, let's pick football as an example, does take time that he could be using to study. However, if he didn't go out for the team, he would be frustrated, thinking I must use this time to study, and yet I really want to be on the team practicing. So he went out for the team mm-hmm. because he figured, okay, the other time that's not practice time, I'll perhaps use more wisely. So I guess it's a matter of the passion of the person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that you'll ask any student athlete, their time management skills are much better during the season of play. So once the season is over, they all of a sudden they have a lot of time. They don't have the practice, so their study habits maybe are not as strong as during the season. But I know at least at Moravian, our student athletes do better academically than the general population because they are used to their time management and used to they have a certain number of hours that they have free in a day. So.
That is interesting. Yes. They have to manage their time well. Mm-hmm. Let me take a quote that I found in the morning call from Mary Beth. She's at Moravian College. I want coaches to come in, work hard, be happy. Same thing for players. I want them to run into the gym, not drag themselves in and say, oh, I've got to practice. Did you actually say those words?
I suppose so. I'm sure no reporter would make them up. I think it just is a mindset. I want my coaches and staff to be excited to come into work and work hard. And I think the same as the players. So,
What's your obsession with breakfast? I assigned different coaches to bring in breakfast so everybody was in a good mood.
I just for staff meetings, when we have early staff meetings, I just found that when we provided food, just as student-athletes, and when you provide any kind of food, everybody's usually in a better frame of mind. So we rotate. The coaches have to bring it. It's usually bagels or something simple. We don't go full out, but... it's just been kind of a nice way to start.
Very interesting idea. We have not talked about esports. Let's just mention those a minute. Now, esports, there's a computer screen, and you're playing a game on the screen, correct? Mm-hmm. And this could very possibly turn into a collegiate sport in the future, right? Is there any dabbling with that on your campuses right now?
Not at Lafayette.
Okay.
Not at Muhlenberg. But I heard a rumor. It is at Moravian.
we did start a e-sport. It's a club. It's not having to do with the athletic department just yet, hopefully. But, it's huge. It's out there. And the only issue I have is, they're making money, a lot of money, so... for the NCAA to ever approve it, it will be kind of tricky because obviously, in every other sport, you're not getting paid to play.
You mean the players in esports are paid?
They compete in tournaments and then they'll get cash rewards in these tournaments.
But that's not connected with the college.
No.
Okay.
But I think what Mary Beth is saying, the NCAA is potentially exploring this. How would you incorporate it on the collegiate level while there's the profitable e-gaming that's going on outside? Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, believe it or not, our time is up for Lehigh Valley Discourse for this evening. And I am very grateful to my guests, Mary Beth Spurk from Moravian College, Lynn Tubman from Muhlenberg, and Sherita Freeman from Lafayette for joining me on Lehigh Valley Discourse. I've been looking forward to this chat that we've just had for a long time, and I really appreciate you coming in.
Thank you.
Let's end with a quote from the great sports writer Grantland Rice. This is a quotation that I learned when I was an undergraduate at Michigan State University because it's etched in a high place in the field house. When the one great scorer comes to mark against your name, he writes, "Not that you won or lost, but how you played the game." Grantland Rice. Thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in this evening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, our Director of Operations, for being our engineer. I'm John Pierce. Until we meet again, remember to be gentle with your neighbor.